Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 272 of the Roguecast, recorded October 8th, 2019. Beach Blanket Bingo Macbeth.
We're back, and it's fall. There's a cold snap that came in. It's 85 degrees outside.
It's raining crickets.
It's raining crickets around Rock.
Yeah,
I think it's just everywhere.
So yeah, I don't know if people know, but if you've been around Texas and you've gone to like any stores during like the first cold snap of the season, a cricket swarm comes and they go to places with big like parking lots with big lights.
Yeah,
and it does make me think like every time I get fast food, then I'm like, if we have trouble keeping them out of our store.
Yeah.
Then fast food restaurant whose door is just always opening and closing, just constantly.
You know, it's better not to think about
it.
It's better not to think about it.
We probably eat at least a few corpses of crickets.
Did you just say it's probably not best not to think about it, and then you said those words?
Of course. I contradicted myself.
People are eating crickets for protein. People are talking about grinding up crickets for cricket bars, like in Snowpiercer.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's like chocolate covered crickets. That's like a
people are trying to convince me that crickets are going to be the next food source. And here's what I say to that: F that.
Birds seem to like them.
Apparently, they're already our food source.
What I was going to say is the good news is like this: the cricket invasion only lasts like a few days.
Yeah.
And then they're gone, and it's too cold for them, or whatever. Too hot for them because it's Texas.
Now that we've reached, temperatures that are not scaldingly destructive to our bodies,
Randy will be sad and we will be happy.
That is correct.
Dave and I can go out and walk and do things outside and not die.
It'll be exciting.
You guys can't walk in 100 degree weather? What are you, wimps?
Yes. I
don't
like
walking
not to
in 100
die.
Degree weather.
I mean, I do too, but.
What do you want to do? Hydrate, not die?
These are important things, Randy.
I got to get out and walk at night so I can listen to scary podcasts like Knife Point Horror.
That's fair.
It's perfect to write at dusk.
All right, so this weekend is also Staple. So people should come out. We're going to be there. At least we'll be there on Saturday. I don't know if I'll be representing on Sunday because I'll be here doing work stuff. But yeah, come on out. It's a good batch of people this year. Notably, the artist from Adventure Zone is going to be there. The artist of Rosemary Valero O'Connell, who does Laura Dean Keeps Breaking Up With Me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to be like a little block with them, with Ngozi Ukazu, who does Check Please, and with Lila Sturgis, who did a Magician's Graphic Novel and a Lumberjanes Graphic Novel recently. So.
And I guess just in case there's anybody out there listening who doesn't know Staple, it's in its, what, like 15th year or something?
I think
wild.
It's 15 this year.
But it's a small press comic expo, but also like sort of all sort of media.
Yeah.
So you'll find local comic book creators, but also like national comic book creators, but who've, you know, with sort of focusing on their independent projects, I guess.
Yep.
I'd say.
And there'll be prints and stickers and other arts and craftsy type stuff. And there's panels like a How to Break Into Comics panel.
Yep.
There's going to be some interviews. There's
One of your kids has been saving up money.
My kid has been saving up money to go to this. Yep. So.
It's a good time. It is certainly family friendly. There's all kinds of cool stuff and cool creators to meet and sketches to, you know, get. Weird jewelry to get. It's cool.
Yeah. All right, so jumping over to the news, we were noticing New York Comic Con was this weekend, but there wasn't a ton of news out of there.
Yeah, or at least nothing that reached our shores.
Yeah.
There were some trailers.
Yeah, some interesting trailers and things. Do we have anything to mention?
So I think the biggest thing is the Star Trek stuff, which, Dave, you do a Star Trek podcast, so that was on your radar.
Yep. We're not formally talking about it until we do our recording this Friday, so I haven't done the sort of deep dive on it. But yeah, there were two trailers, as well as the release of the first short trek, the Star Trek Discovery shorts. This one featuring Spock and Number One from the Enterprise trapped in a turbo lift.
Yep, which I haven't watched because I don't have my CBS All Access at the moment.
So we won't go into detail on that, but it's out there, and I thought it was fun. I dug it. But the big things were
the Star Trek Picard trailer, the second Picard trailer.
Right, which it doesn't fill in a whole lot of detail, but it does have a few notable guests returning.
Yeah, the the biggest moment for me was the. I thought they did a good job of the guest stars returning.
Yeah, do we want to say or?
Yeah, no, we shouldn't say.
Okay,
let people discover.
The first one, of course, surprised people with what 7 of 9 was the big one.
Yeah, and they flesh out a little bit more. 7 of 9 seems to have become like a freelance operative helping people kind of.
Yeah, she's kind of a badass.
Yeah,
and clearly, like for that first trailer, kind of has picked up on human colloquialisms and stuff in a way that, say, Data never did.
Yeah.
Data, of course, was shown also in the first trailer, and there's at least a few more in here.
Picard seems to be sad old man Picard.
A little bit, but there's several glimpses of him being kind of like, it's clear he's sad old man at the beginning on his vineyard, hoping it would kind of bring him peace. Yeah. But then this lady comes to him, she has something going on that he clearly tries to get Starfleet approval on to help, and they're like, uh-uh. And he assembles some sort of crew of Romulans to help him out.
Are they all Romulans?
I think they are. Not sure. Actually, I guess I don't know that they all are.
Okay.
But it seems clear he's some sort of hero to the Romulan people since the destruction of Romulus.
Dave, am I going to have to watch Nemesis to understand this show?
I don't think so. But
might not hurt.
Might not hurt. Nemesis has some fun stuff in it.
All right.
What's the name? Is really a good villain in it.
Isn't there also a Dune Buggy?
There is a Dune Buggy.
Okay.
Picard drives a dune buggy.
Yeah, that was Patrick. Patrick Stewart wanted to drive a dune buggy. He wanted the last few movies, he was wanting to be more action hero in them, which was kind of a little weird coming from the Shakespearean actor. But, you know, you're on the big screen, I guess the bug bites you.
Can't drive a dune buggy in Macbeth, so...
You can.
They do like to do their updated version of Shakespeare's
Macbeth set on the beach in the 60s. It's like a beach blanket. Yeah. Macbeth. I can see that. I mean, they do like to change that around, so...
Yeah. Well, you know, the murders could be like rivals on the beach, you know? Another muscle man on the beach, gotta die.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go back to Star Trek for a moment.
No, let's keep casting Beach Blanket Bingo Macbeth.
Beach Blanket McBingo. he did become some sort of hero to the Romulans, and there's badass dude who's like a swordsman who looks like Legolas.
Yep.
Who's Romulan. In this trailer, we saw at least a brief glimpse a couple times of one of those old Romulan Bird of Prey ships from the original series.
That's not their ship, is it?
I didn't think so, but they show it twice, kind of wheeling around and maneuvering. They clearly have a sort of maverick pilot. They could be using like a decommissioned Bird of Prey that's like all souped up.
Yeah. It's odd. As I look at this, I'm excited for it.
There's also something with the Borg cube that looks like it's been like maybe taken over by the Romulans.
This does feel a little more Firefly-ish. It's a little bit outside of what Star Trek usually does, but I'm okay with that. I think it's okay to do something a little different than Star Trek universe.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have to kind of see what they are overall doing with it and you know, how it's all going to play out. And I was going to say, Picard does seem like he gets kind of more into things as he finds a cause.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be at least part of the first few episodes. Yeah. And it is cool to see the guest stars who are in it.
Yeah.
So the other one is there's a trailer for Star Trek Discovery season 3, third season.
Which jumps into like a thousand years past what we've known.
Yep. And at least the vibe I got on it. Do you agree, Randy, that this, it seems like maybe the Federation has fallen in this.
The Federation has definitely fallen, although we don't know how long it's been.
Right. And but we don't know if it's like become a shadow of its former self or it literally doesn't exist or what. They didn't really give details. But somebody is talking to Burnham, the lead character on Discovery, and saying like you could be sort of the spark that brings it back or something like that.
Yeah.
It seems clear that the crew may have spent some time. Did it seem to you like they had been like divided up?
Yeah, it kind of does. Yeah.
So you're going to see sort of what's happened to each of the sort of major crewmen that are in there, but that includes Burnham, Tilly, Saru. Yeah. Who's Michelle Yeoh's character? Why can't I say her name?
Oh, Georgiou. So. Yeah. Is the spinoff not happening?
It's happening, but it's like still like a year or two out. It's just so slow scheduling.
Are they going to go back then?
At least she will.
Yeah.
Like that seems almost certain.
Yeah.
Because she's going to be the head of the spinoff he's talking about is Section 31, which is sort of like a secretive black ops group in Star Trek, and we know that Mirror Universe Georgiou has got pulled in with them and like rapidly ascended through the ranks and kind of took over. But is now trapped with them in this future, so it seems like a weird place to do Section 31 stuff. I guess it could still happen there, but I'm going to guess it's going to happen back in what had been the present of Star Trek Discovery, a.k.a. a few years before Kirk's time.
Yeah. It's interesting. I really love Discovery. I know there are some people... I saw this the trailer for season 3 posted on, I think it was like Sci-Fi or whatever, and I went and looked. You should never read the comments on the internet, but sometimes I want to see how angry people are.
Yep.
Man, people are... Not only do they hate Star Trek Discovery, they are convinced that that is the only right opinion. Like, they post things as if... They were posting, like, garbage fire GIFs, and they're just like, no, that's what Discovery is. It's terrible. It's not canon. It's it destroys everything. And, man, yeah. People do not like Discovery.
Yeah, and yet, it is, like, I think I've seen that it's, like, one of the... Or, like, literally the most successful, like, streaming original property right now or
it's
something like that.
Wildly successful, and it's great.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I do know that, like, I think, like, some of those people are just, like, they're just, like, trolls.
Yeah.
Oh, there's, like, you know, there's, like, trashy people in every fandom.
Somewhere.
Star Wars has a lot of them.
Oh, yeah.
I think more than Star Trek, to be honest.
Yeah, probably.
But they're everywhere. You know, you make a change in the comics, and sometimes the trashy fans come out, too, and freak out. So, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I do sometimes wonder if they're sincere. And I kind of think fans get that weird entitlement. Even I feel the urge sometimes. So, I guess where I can understand where it comes from. But, you know, unclench, people. Good lord. I thought it was a fun trailer. I actually expected to like the Picard trailer more, but I was a little bit more into the Discovery trailer.
Yeah. I'm into both of them. I'll definitely be getting CBS All Access back to watch these.
Yeah, I'm excited for both.
Then there was news, speaking of streaming TV, Ana DuVernay is apparently directing a DMZ pilot for HBO Max, which is Warner Brothers' new streaming service.
DMZ, the Vertigo book from a few years ago.
From Brian Wood that's like...
Well, I don't know how that can be relevant.
Right, it posited a civil war in America and set itself in a demilitarized zone.
In New York,
where a journalist, like a young journalist, was trapped there and was trying to do stories from the front line, mm-hmm. but found himself unable to not get involved in sort of the war.
Yeah.
It was good work from Brian Wood and a host of artists, and may have some relevance. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, Ana DuVernay seems, you know, perfect to do that kind of a story. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I would. It's developing it for whom?
The HBO Max.
What's that?
It's the streaming network from Warner Brothers.
Okay.
I just want to know if I already own HBO.
No, it's going to be a separate thing.
So stupid. Yeah. I'm not going to buy another $15 thing.
I know.
Yeah, all the streaming services are a crazy mess.
There's a crash coming for the streaming services, and they all know it. They're just, everybody's trying to get out in front.
Everybody's convinced that it won't be them.
Yep, everybody's convinced it won't be them. But there's definitely a crash coming.
But I would say, if nothing else, that sounds like an interesting project. Yeah. I'd be curious about it. It may be too real. It may be like doing a story about the Vietnam War in Vietnam, right, while it was raging.
Yeah.
And most of the times, sometimes you need a little more clarity on that, like the clarity of years. But this is, at least at the moment, a fictional idea.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. It came about in the Trump, and it came about in the Bush era. Doing it again in the Trump era is going to be some changes. So,
for sure.
Kind of like Wild Last Man, I'm sure will be quite different when it comes to the screen.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy is saying that his next movie is going to be Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Okay.
Is this a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, so let's just quick say we know that he's on a bit of a comeback.
Yep.
Yeah.
His name is Dolomite. Is getting like rave reviews.
And what's that on?
I think it's Netflix.
Netflix. Yeah. It's actually out now.
I think they did one of... Netflix is doing the occasional let's put it in theaters in, like, select cities. It's usually New York, L.A.
Yeah.
And then it'll hit streaming service. Like that Lupita Nyong'o movie that she has about the zombies and the kids.
Oh, yeah.
That's hitting Hulu on the 11th, because it's a Hulu movie.
Oh, okay.
That's why it's only in, like, select theaters.
Okay.
So, yeah, this one seems to be kind of that thing.
Another limited release?
I'm looking forward to it. The reviews I've heard are great. I grew up with liking Eddie Murphy a lot.
And this is definitely a, like, sort of more serious effort. It's not like one of those with, like, the clumps or whatever.
God, no. This is definitely...
This is him, like, playing a... Was he a comedian?
Yes.
Because I actually don't know a lot about the backstory.
I don't know much about it.
But who created the persona of, like... Is it like a pimp?
Yep.
Dolomite, the pimp?
Yep.
Who that then kind of emerged. It, like, became a big thing in pop culture. And, so it's going to be a mixture of drama and kind of some comedy. The trailers looked really good. I got good vibes off of them. Like, oh, this is a serious comeback. Now, does that mean that Beverly Hills Cop 4 is a good idea?
No,
not necessarily.
Well, they're doing Coming to America 2.
Coming to America 2, then Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Okay.
He's also going to host Saturday Night Live for the first time in a long, long time.
Yeah, he hasn't done that. And,
yeah.
I'm curious about Coming to America, too, because they were getting everybody back.
But what is the story of Coming to America, too? They came.
I have no idea.
They came to America.
Honestly, even though like that was big, larger than life comedy,
yeah.
There may be something to say about an era of immigration problems. You know, or like somebody who's like, say it was about his son who like wants to leave America.
Yeah.
And there's, okay. You know, comedy. He's like, and Eddie Murphy as like the prince or king in America is like, okay, go on home. See if you like it. And you get this kind of like a flip flop on the two worlds or something like
He'll be the new owner of McDonald's, I believe is what it was.
Yeah, it was McDonald's.
Right.
They had the Big Mick.
But I know, like,
I think you could find a story.
Yeah.
I guess. I feel like going back to either of those is probably a mistake, but you know, you never know.
Well, he feels like he's on kind of like a kick, wanting to revisit some of his best. And I hope he wants to make up.
It feels a little like he might have jumped at that too quick before his comeback was, like, official.
True.
But, like, I think I'd like for it to happen. Like, I don't wish Eddie Murphy any ill. Like, I hope he makes a cool comeback.
Yeah, me too.
And hopefully he will make up for the atrocity that is Beverly Hills Cop 3, even though I've watched that multiple times.
Oh, my God. Will he and Crazy Nick Nolte make 48 more hours?
No, I don't think he'll ever work with Nick Nolte again.
Because there were another 48 hours.
Yeah.
But they should do another
one. They probably shouldn't. That seems ill-advised.
All right. Jordan Peele has inked a 5-year deal with Universal, so I guess he's going to be doing all right for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I guess as of Get Out, he felt like he had basically written his ticket.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good news.
Yeah.
Of the two movies he's made, I know he's producing a lot.
Yeah.
But of the two movies he's made, I did not like Us as much as I liked Get Out, but it was super interesting.
I'm starting to see conventional wisdom among some of my friends that Us was not very good.
Oh, it's that's
interesting.
Really?
Yeah, and I loved Us. I don't think it's better than
I think
Get Out.
At the time, I felt like it wore its kind of symbolism a little too much on its sleeve.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost too aware of stuff. And, you know, he had, like, all these interesting Easter eggs in Get Out, but, you know, it sort of it didn't feel like you needed them to kind of get the broad strokes, and like there was a lot of like you know, well, what was the deal with Hands Across America?
Yeah.
You know, like for Us, but it almost felt a little, when I was reading up on it, a little cliff notesy to kind of like decode the movie.
Yeah.
Now that said, it was interesting decoding, and I do overall really like it. I mean, you cannot say that movie is like just like some traditional movie just because it plays a little bit off of Body Snatchers and stuff.
Right.
There's still nothing really like it.
Right. No. I agree.
And I really enjoyed it. It has tons of great scenes in it. So I'm happy. I think he's going to continue to evolve.
Me too.
Honestly, even if he did stumble, like if he stumbles on his third one or something like that, it's not going to make me less interested in like his career trajectory. I think he's clearly got greatness in
him. I don't see him like doing the same trajectory as like M. Night Shyamalan or something like that. I think he's got more in it.
He could, although I think Shyamalan like has like I think 4 or 5 like pretty good to great movies to his name. And that's not a bad thing to have.
Then he made the Pissed Off Trees movie.
Yeah, well, you know, he crashed hard. He crashed hard. But we both liked his wrap up to his trilogy, his Unbreakable trilogy.
It was class.
Yep, he's been and horror movie.
He has that new Apple TV show coming?
Does he?
Yeah,
he's actually. It doesn't look great.
What is
it? I haven't watched the trailer.
Is it a Twilight Zone-ish type thing?
No, it's. I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, I forget what it is. But
nothing the Apple TV is doing looks great to me.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know anything
but
about
maybe
that.
They're just bad at trailers. I don't know. all right, and then there was one bit of comic news out of New York Comic Con. There's King Thor, I guess, is going to continue. He has a new look.
Yep.
And that Donny Cates is going to take over writing him.
It's interesting.
Is King Thor set, like, in the future?
No.
He's King Thor now in the present?
Yep.
Yeah, he's basically Odin right now.
Right.
He's got that power, he has...
Well, we've seen at least some versions of that in the past.
Yeah. He's been Odin before, yeah.
Yeah, he's been Odin before. I've been Odin before.
Oh yeah, I was Odin last week.
Everyone was Odin. but it's interesting that Donny Cates is moving to Thor. I mean, somebody had to after Aaron completed
Donny Cates is such a metalhead.
Oh yeah.
Carnage, Thor. Even
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians. Even Doctor Strange is kind of... that's the psychedelic side.
Yeah.
But that's.
But he will write every Marvel character soon.
Yeah, he definitely seems to be in that Bendis, in that vein of the.
Could he pull off She-Hulk?
Yeah, he could probably do She-Hulk.
Probably so. He'd make a metal, but. it'd be better than the last She-Hulk.
I've liked his Venom stuff and some of his other projects.
I'm going to try it out. I think he's a good writer. He fluctuates between good and great.
So wait, so he's taken over King Thor?
Yeah, he's essentially taken over.
Which was a miniseries that was written by Jason Aaron?
I don't think we knew it was a miniseries. We just kind of assumed it was a miniseries because it was Aaron wrapping
up. Yeah, it was wrapping up his like final story.
Right.
So yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break and talk comics in just a minute. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, October 9th, and I think we've got some notable things here. Some new books starting, the House of X stuff coming to a close.
Yep.
And
Randy, you and I believe have number ones. Yep. Nick has something that occurs later on in a series. Yep. People can go ahead and begin placing their bets on what that series is. They may have a notion. They may not have a notion. I don't know.
So I'll start off. I picked this week Cobra Kai, The Karate Kid Saga Continues, number one. This is by Denton Tipton. Isn't it Scott and something else Tipton, the guys who write the Star Trek stuff?
Yeah.
How many Tiptons are there?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily related to him, but I suspect it is. I think they're probably some sort of Tipton empire now.
Yeah, the Tipton clan.
They clearly have their hands all over licensed properties. Yeah. They seem pretty good at it.
More importantly, though, the artist by Kagan McLeod, who did an awesome graphic novel called Infinite Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Which makes he's a perfect guy to do a karate book. This is a tie-in to the YouTube series Cobra Kai.
Right, which is awesome.
I thought I was going to hate, and I wound up loving.
Yeah. It was an unexpected, like, just a really fun show.
Yeah. So this story is basically, it does some flashbacks to Johnny as a teenager, and then it also has the modern-day stuff with him and his new crew in the dojo, which includes Hawk and the girl and... something Diaz.
Yeah, I can't quite remember all the characters' names. Hawk is easy to remember because he has a crazy mohawk.
Yes. Yep. It goes back and sort of flashback to the early days of Johnny's relationship, how he met Allie, their early relationship, his early karate, because he's like telling the story to his kids, and we're getting it sort of filtered through his sensibilities, and then they show us what actually happened.
Right. And if you kind of see that, like, he had, like, kind of a crap-ass home life.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So going to, like, the karate dojo and, like, really throwing himself into that and becoming a champion a few years in a row was, like, a big thing for him. It was, like, a way for him to get out of the situation he was in.
It does the same thing that Cobra Kai, the show, does, which is sort of recontextualize a little bit so that you see, oh, he had a reason for being such a jerk, but that doesn't change that he was still a jerk.
Right.
And is still a jerk. Like,
right.
That's
I appreciated the show owned that.
Yeah.
Because if they hadn't, I wouldn't have wanted to watch
it. Yeah. He is definitely not a good guy. He's just trying to be better.
Right.
The weird thing is it spends the last, like, 8 pages just, like, recapping Karate Kid, which is a little weird.
It's the notable scene on the beach in Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's slightly recontextualized by what you've seen around it. I think they maybe wanted to show that... so that you see him trying to be a better person and then kind of blowing up and becoming his worst self.
Yeah.
At least in this first issue to show that he kind of tried and failed, I guess, in a way.
But it's got really nice art, and I would say if you are enjoying the YouTube series, this is a good thing to check out. Dave, what do you got?
I'm going to pick the first of a 12-part miniseries from Warren Ellis, which is... he does a lot of 12-part miniseries.
He does.
It's kind of one of his things. This is for DC, so it's in a slightly unusual outing for him, and it's called The Batman's Grave. So it's a big old Batman miniseries. It was billed as a mystery, and it absolutely is a mystery with all kinds of detective-y stuff going on in it, kind of an unusual psychological bent. It's being drawn by Brian Hitch, who's doing a very good job, and... people probably know Hitch best from his work on the Ultimates way back when, but he's since done a ton of stuff. Last thing he was doing was, what, Hawkman?
Yep.
So, yeah, he's been doing pretty regular work at DC lately. The interesting thing about this is that there's things in it that I maybe normally wouldn't like in a comic that I liked as Ellis presents them, and I kind of want to see how he's going to develop them. So one thing is that this has a Alfred who's kind of in a, like, hit by, like, a, I'm going to say a fit of melancholy here.
He's mean. He's mean, Alfred.
I don't think he's mean at all
in it.
He's
mean to Bruce.
No, he's kind of sad, drunk guy. Yeah. So what happens is he's, Bruce is on a sort of late night mission and he's doing his usual sort of backup stuff. You see a little bit of sort of a normal night for Batman, but it kind of, culminates in a somewhat unusual mystery, a death inside a really, like, kind of a poor section of town. And I actually really like this sequence where Batman kind of just talks to the neighbors outside and gets some information from them. It's one of those ones where, like, weirdly, even though Batman is this, like, hulking kind of muscled monstrosity, he kind of talks to them in a normal, respectful way. And, like, he doesn't seem like he was, like, going out of his way to creep them out or anything. These are just the people who, like, called in a 911 call, and 911 was so busy that night that they couldn't get through. So Batman is like, let me go look into it. And he finds there's a singular dead body. It's like, laying on, like, a sort of a couch or a futon thing. Yep. There's clippings all over the wall of Batman stories and lots of other little weird details that he picks up on. He's conversing with Alfred about this, but Alfred who is like busted out the scotch and stuff like that when he gets home is just it's almost like he's just been like, we've done this a lot and I'm just kind of tired. It feels like we're not getting anywhere. And this has a little bit of that meta thing that I normally wouldn't like, of him saying, this is a real criticism some people have of Bruce Wayne. They're like, well, Bruce Wayne shouldn't be using his money to go out there and beat up thugs. He should be using his money to better Gotham.
I thought it was interesting that they can, because that's a common thing amongst the fans, but
yep.
They bring it up, but I don't think he addressed it. I hope he's planning to address that.
I sort of think he will. Batman says something like, Alfred is a little bit harsh in sort of saying, like, suggesting that he's sort of going after the symptom, not the disease, or something like that. And I don't know if Alfred was going to say the disease is capitalism or something, if he was headed there, but it felt like he might have been.
Yeah.
I think Batman does say, like, you know, that's not what I'm doing, that we're not just going out to beat up people just for fun. So I think there's at least an acknowledgement that that's sort of Alfred being a little unfair. He's drunk and he's not being completely fair.
I don't like Alfred being drunk. It's weird.
I actually really liked it.
Did you?
Yeah, I know. I thought it was interesting. I don't think he was, like, exceptionally cruel. I don't think Alfred has to be a perfect guy all the time, because that weirdly fits to me too much into the, like, the he's his slave servant guy.
He
should be a guy who can slip a little bit. And I wouldn't even call getting drunk and being a little melancholy slipping. That's just him being human. And I liked it. I thought that Brian Hitch's kind of photorealistic art did a good job of kind of capturing that sort of realism there. And there's another big sequence in it that's sort of a detective sequence where Bruce kind of does... This was actually a little bit like what you would see in an Arkham game, but taken to a more psychological level. He, like, does, like, is this actually, like, a 3D recreation of the room?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he had scanned it while he was there, and then he projects it in the Batcave, and he does a walkthrough, and he sort of, he actually tells Alfred something like, I can't get in the mind of a killer, so I have to get in the mind of the victim. Now, yeah. I think he's done getting in the mind of a killer before, so I don't know if that exactly matches up, but it's Warren Ellis's thesis, so, you know, this is going to be his 12th issue, so he's relevant.
It was an interesting touch, I thought.
Yeah, and so what he does is he kind of converses as the person who's died, as it's like he's working out, trying to figure out what happened. It's like there's a lot of clues that kind of don't add up, and he's needing to get inside this guy's head to try and figure it out, which gets kind of weird because it's almost as if the guy himself, the body, gets up and is talking, sort of conversing with him. Anyway, there's more twists to be had in a last page where I don't know exactly what's going on, but yeah, it's kind of Warren Ellis weird. But I actually, I like just about every page of this. I like the artwork in it from Hitch, and I am interested to, especially if Ellis kind of addresses in some way the difficult question he brought up. I mean, we know the real answer that to why doesn't Batman just use all his money to eliminate poverty in there is because that's not a cool action story.
It's true.
And this is an action comic. But on sort of a meta level, people are like, well, is he just a rich guy who goes out and beats up poor people and doesn't go after the fat cats and stuff like that? And I'll be curious to see if Ellis really wants to address that or if he was just kind of using it as a story prompt.
Yeah, It's a weird thing to bring up if you're not going to address it, which is why I think that Ellis probably is going to address it.
He's got 12 issues. Yeah. So, and I don't know if this is going to be like a mystery that deepens and becomes something else or where it's going to go. But yeah, 12 issues is actually a fair amount to do. And yeah, like there must be more to say.
By the way, the title of the book comes from the revelation that the Waynes had like, had Bruce's grave they like have his gravestone next to their gravestone because they wanted to rest of it. That's creepy. No wonder he's so messed up. No wonder he's so goth.
Yeah, you know, with Ellis,
he got it from his dad.
Yep, Ellis. Alfred's like cleaning the tombstones, kind of just doing his normal maintenance work on them, and thinking about. It's clearly that's sort of what triggered his melancholy.
I don't think that's a crazy thing because I mean I know families who buy multiple plots.
Sure, but it's on their land. They'd be walking around. He's like, "Look, Bruce, that's where your body's gonna lay."
It's a little weird.
As Alfred narrates it, though, it sort of has. He says they loved their boy and wanted to rest with him, and so his grave and stone were prepared at the same time.
Yeah.
So they say it. It's sort of sweet as he kind of puts it.
Yeah.
And almost fits almost more like what I would think is almost like an English tradition in a way, even though the Waynes aren't supposed to be English. But
you remember Nick in Justified? There was that in the show Justified. There was this whole thing where like they had the grave for his mom and his dad and him out front of their house in Kentucky, and I would always mess him up.
Yeah.
That was what I thought. That was where my brain went. It's like, man, I don't know. So your kids seeing a grave all their life of that's where you're going to die.
I wouldn't even be surprised if that was what prompted him to think about that.
Yeah.
Because he mentioned some other story in this or something like that. The Batman himself said it like this something about this case reminds him of. I forget what it was, but I was like, I bet this is what Warren Ellis read that prompted him to start thinking about a case like this.
Yeah.
I forget what it was, but I think that's Warren Ellis just tipping the hat, sort of saying, hey, readers, if this sounds a little familiar, I was inspired by it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he was inspired by that, too, and just sort of felt that that sort of gothic sort of trapping fit in with a Batman story. I somewhat take Warren Ellis as like his own little sub-continuity at times, the same way I do with Grant Morrison. So honestly, if he does a few things in here that I'm like, I don't know if I like that being canon, I'm not going to really worry about it. It's his own 12-issue thing. Yeah. It might be a little off-canon.
That makes sense. You know, I kind of, as I think about it, like this and the Superman story you did that you also were a fan of, it's not always for me, but I kind of would like to see like what would Warren Ellis' Justice League look like.
Yeah.
So I want it to be, because it'd be off the side of everything else, but I'd like to see his take of how these characters all interact with one another.
Yeah. Having reread his Thunderbolts run, I was reminded in a lot of ways how much he kind of wants to root for the good guys. Yeah. He just doesn't like superheroes that much. And yet he can sometimes do some good, very good work in that realm that's not just like subversive stuff like the Authority.
I think mostly I need Warren Ellis stuff to be out of continuity. I mean, like Next Wave, for example, that I don't love and everybody else does. Once it started infecting continuity, I liked it even less. So, I like his stuff to be off on its own, his own little world. So, I like the Wildstorm stuff.
I have a feeling that when he did Next Wave, I don't think he particularly thought of it as being in continuity.
No, it's just that if something is popular, they will always try to drag it out of the continuity.
It's true.
Nick?
What you got?
I mean, if you guys put your money on me picking the last issue of Powers of 10, you have won. I think I've picked every issue except for one of this series.
And that was the big stinker issue.
No, that was just a week where there was a stronger number
one. Just too
many
choices
Exactly.
Well, and also I think it was because you couldn't talk about it because there were so many spoilers.
Right. And this one is a little bit of that. I would highly recommend picking up this entire series. The hardcover of it is coming out in, I think, a month and a half or so?
Yeah, and in a few weeks we should have all the single issues back in, too.
Yeah, if you're curious about the X-Men...
This I have never seen so many people curious about the X-Men as right now.
They're X-curious.
They are. This issue, I'm not going to go into details because I don't want to spoil the fun for people, but it is sort of Hickman unfurling the sort of landscape that his X-Men books will inhabit.
The Powers of 10 issues that it is set, but like it gives you glimpses of both past, present, and future, and then far future.
Yes.
Does that continue all the way to the end?
Yes.
So we see like the X-Men of 100 years.
There are things that I won't spoil that kind of change that notion up a little bit.
Okay. I'm not surprised that he does a little subversion even of his own premise.
But this issue is mainly focusing on the three main characters, which is Xavier, Magneto, and Moira. and okay. how they sort of come to the conclusion of what their new idea, basically how it will save them.
Like, what if mutants were snappier dressers?
Well, I mean, I think from the very get-go of this, we were all... A lot of people were concerned that this isn't the Xavier that we know.
Yeah.
That he's definitely being a little bit more...
Isn't he wearing a helmet the whole time?
Yeah.
That's a weird thing.
There's a reason for that.
Can you say it?
Yeah, that one is sort of... He has to wear it in order to sort of copy the mutants, like, psyches around them.
Yeah.
For a reason.
Right.
It's not like a duplicitous, like, evilness. It's just sort of what he has to do.
Do you... I'm curious, Nick. Do you ever see him in this series without that helmet?
One time, and you don't see his face.
There is no doubt that he's, like, building some mystery around it. It's got to be something that carries over into the new X-Men book he's
doing. I mean,
doing
you could say that, but, I mean from what I understand, this is Xavier. It's maybe not, like, the Xavier that we...
I know, but it's a little bit of that, like, the eyes are the window to the soul. You don't write a character and never allow their face to be seen unless it's Judge Dredd.
Or Cyclops.
And even Cyclops, they found ways.
That's true.
Gene would keep him in check, or he'd lose his powers, or whatever.
I mean, I could see sort of Hickman saying that this is...
I mean, it could be...
Not a broken Xavier, but this is one where he's had to become something else in order
right.
to...
What if he's Zorn?
No, because there are other Zorns.
I was going to say, it could be a metaphor. Like, Xavier, yeah, he does feel like he can't be himself, that he needs to push himself to something new, and
yeah,
so
like
the helmet represents...
It's like a new persona that embodies the spirit of what he's doing now.
But the fact that they, like, kind of keep it, like, you know, they don't even show him, like, taking it off and having some private moment of doubt or something like that, leads me to believe Hickman wants to hint at something sinister... Or duplicitous about
it. Well, I will say,
we
see him in flashbacks where he doesn't have the helmet.
Okay.
I mean, throughout the years.
Is he still in Phantom X's body?
It does not seem that.
Okay.
This seems like his own body again.
So along with the heat claws, did everything Charles Soule did get basically erased?
I think so.
That's probably for the best. None of it
I think
better.
It is. I think it is. The heat paws were dumb. I mean, I'm just not,
yep,
no ifs, ands, or
yep,
buts.
Yep.
And Xavier walking around in a Phantom X body was also stupid.
Yeah.
So, good riddance. but yeah, no, this is setting the stage for the 6 new X books coming out. I mean, next week sees the X-Men number 1 release.
Right, we're going to
Nick,
release
without
them.
Without asking too much, does Krakoa, the sentient island
yes.
thing, continue to play a role?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's their home.
Yeah, I was just curious if that's... So, like, presumably that will be a thing in, like, the new series and all
yeah,
that?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, we'll have the Midnight release next week, and then I think every week after that is a release of a new X-Book.
Okay. Let's do Midnight releases for all of them, boys.
Nope.
Yeah. I have to admit that Hickman doing, like, this checklist in the back of, like, all the books that are coming out, giving their dates, he's like, these are coming out. They're,
right.
We're not going to have a skip week. We're not going to have...
It's interesting.
So it's kind of an interesting
It's on
thing.
One of his fancy, like, grids that have, like, codes
yeah.
and stuff in them. So they,
if you
Marvel
miss this
is
date,
not allowed
this
to do
grid
it.
Is, like, destroyed.
And yeah, and Hickman will come for you if you mess with his
very
graphs.
True.
Yeah, don't mess with Hickman's graphs.
Nick, do you got any others you want to mention?
Yeah, there's two other books. I finally broke down and started reading the Gwenpool book, or I guess this is called Gwenpool Strikes Back.
Yep.
I've never read any other Gwenpool. I
yep.
own an action figure of Gwenpool because I had to get a Build-A-Figure, and, you know...
Yeah, I don't particularly care about Gwenpool, but that's a good figure. Like, it's really well-made.
It is. It's well-made. This is a bizarre book that is kind of a mixture of Deadpool turned up to, like, 25.
Yep. It's got that all... It's very meta and plugged into kind of pop culture-y stuff.
Yeah, and I have to say, some of the jokes land, some of them are... I'm a little bit... Maybe it's just because I'm old... that I'm scratching my head at.
Yep.
So not everything lands for me. I can certainly see why people are tuning into this one, though, because this writer, Leah Williams, she's funny.
Isn't that Alan Moore's daughter?
No, I think Leah Moore.
Yeah, that's Leah Moore.
That makes sense.
I did have the same thought, though, when I heard it, because there's not a lot of Leahs in comics
no.
that I can think of.
I
saw some part, Anna showed me where... Cap and Bucky are walking around on an island in swim trunks.
This has an homage to the old swimsuit issues.
And, okay, and Gwenpool thinking that they're hot dudes and sort of spoofing a little bit on the, like, The slash fiction that's become a huge thing, of course, out of many stories, but that one, you know, Captain Bucky or a common one, she suggests that she'd really like to see them wrestle.
Yeah.
And that's also just the kind of typical of the weird humor.
Yeah, there's also a breakdown of, like, the characters with, like, sort of, you know how Marvel likes to do with their little caption boxes of who they are.
Yeah.
And there are kind of weird ones.
Well, that's the one that's like spoofing the internet thing. You've seen that internet memes, meme, Nick?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Where
no,
it'll be like, they have like a picture of a character, like you pick which one represents you, and it could all be a bunch of.
Is that like three traits? Yeah, it's.
Okay, so this is how unplugged I am from.
It is an internet meme thing.
That's what it seems like. Most of this is crazy internet meme culture translated into Marvel Comics.
Yeah. Which is weird and funny.
But makes sense. It's like what kids are going to be very familiar with.
Yeah.
Now.
So, I mean, if that sounds interesting to you, I would definitely. Give it a shot.
Anna, it'll make Anna happy.
Yeah, talk to Anna about it. Not me. Please not.
And then the other book that I read and enjoyed was the Joker Harley Criminal Sanity book.
From DC's Black Label?
Yeah.
It's oversized. It's got fancy art.
So I am kind of in like the furthest possibility of caring about anything Joker and Harley right now.
Yeah.
So for them to put out a book and me reading it and actually finding enjoyment out of it is pretty big.
Yeah.
But this is sort of taking that character dynamic and turning on its head in the sense that Harley works for the GCPD.
This is like an alternate universe take.
Universe.
This isn't even like a stylized take on normal events we know, but it's like she's taken her like knowledge of psychology from her Harleen Quinzel days and become like a profiler.
Yeah,
right?
Like a forensic profiler who is investigating a series of a new serial killer.
That's in the present, and there's some scenes in the past.
Yep,
is that right?
That is true.
Is she actually Harley Quinn in the present?
Nope. She is just Harleen Quinzel, and she is literally just a profiler.
Is she going to become Harley in the course of the series?
I kind of hope not.
Because it's not called Joker Harleen, it's called Joker Harley.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible.
Maybe
he's going to
buy a motorcycle.
But this is sort of Hannibal by way of the DC universe.
Yep.
And I thought it was an interesting concept. Okay. And I think really well executed.
I think people might be into that.
The art, which is two artists. There's Miko Swayan and Mike Mayhew.
Mike Mayhew did amazing covers for Starman a few years back.
And Mike Mayhew continues to be an amazing artist.
It's a sort of not quite Alex Ross photorealistic vibe, but there is something of a photorealistic style to it.
Yeah. Both the past and present.
And Soyan is a name I know, too. I don't remember where that artist has come from, but that's Image Book, maybe. But the artist.
It reminds me a little of, like, the art on Black Magic.
If only there was some kind of successful Joker movie that was driving people to comic stores right now.
They might find just the thing they're looking for between this and the Harley comic.
Exactly.
Yep.
Congratulations, DC, for marketing properly.
Dave, what do you got?
Let's see. There is a new Doctor Doom ongoing series from Marvel where I know they...
I think it's a mini.
Oh, is it a mini?
I mean, it's by default going to be a mini.
They're saying it's an ongoing...
But it's going to be a mini. It may be like 10 or 12 issues. It's by the dude who did She Can Fly and before that... Halt and Catch Fire on TV. It's really nice art by Salvador Larroca.
The anime series from was it Rooster Teeth?
Yeah.
Ruby? Gets a American comic from DC Comics. Again, I don't know if it's a miniseries or not.
We don't know what RWBY stands for. I'm going to say Real Women by Yogurt.
Sure. I do believe I looked this up, and it's the initials of each of the main characters.
Oh.
But that's not... I like your story better.
Or Rapid Werewolves, but yet...
Being yokels.
Being yokels.
You send in your best suggestions for what Ruby stands for in the subject line, and we will hear them out. DC has a sort of their Halloween book is called Secrets of Sinister House. It's like in the 80-page giant format that they've been doing lately. But I think this is essentially their Halloween special for this year.
Rustic witches building yurts.
There is a Joker one-off part of the Year of the Villain specials that is co-written by John Carpenter. You might have heard of him. He's probably one of the greatest horror directors of all time.
It's true.
There's a Star Wars prequel comic to the new, Rise of Skywalker? Is that what the new movie is called?
Yes, it is, yes.
Yeah, so it is set after Last Jedi, but before Rise of Skywalker, and you can kind of find out, it's got the rebels on the run from the First Order, trying to find allies, trying to secure a, they need allies, they need weapons, they're trying to get together with
a base.
Mon Calamari.
They have a base that's about to be put up.
Yeah. But, so anyway, yeah, this is like pretty important sequel or prequel stuff if you want to kind of get a taste of what's coming up.
Yeah, I have to say I'm of two minds on this because I had my issues with Last Jedi in particular, the notion of like, I don't like this in the Force Awakens. One of the few things I didn't like is the notion that the rebels are still on the run. They're yeah. not the government. The First Order is still a power. Like, to make them back to being this, like, really ragtag bunch again seems like a weird reversion.
Yeah, at the end of Last Jedi, it felt like they had about 30 people.
Yeah, and that's what it feels like here, too.
Yeah, it's a little weirdly, like, you know, you're always going to focus on a bit of the small group of the leadership.
Sure.
But it is weirdly focused.
Yeah. That said, I loved the sort of the reunion of all these characters, like seeing them all. I love that Leia is very much active in this, mm-hmm. And it was fun. It has me hyped for Rise of Skywalker. So
yeah, and they do kind of like several of the other characters from the new Star Wars movies they're kind of off on their own little side missions yep. and stuff like that. So you get to see little mini groups, just like when the Justice League breaks up to take down villains.
I always like when Finn and Poe are together.
Yep.
All right, for me, I've got. The fourth issue of Black Hammer Justice League, which is pretty fun, and reveals a prominent DC villain to be behind the whole thing, which was a pretty great twist.
Oh, cool.
Usagi Jim number 5, which is a two-parter story. This is a sort of typically sort of Japanese no upbeat ending kind of thing. It's like a tragic ending. But it was interesting. It's an interesting story about a woman who's become a successful writer, and her samurai husband feels jealous of her because he's supposed to be the one getting all the glory, and... In Feudal Japan, it does not. There's no Me Too movement in Feudal Japan.
Right, right. No, that's an interesting sounding story.
Web of Black Widow number 2 finds Black Widow up against a Winter Soldier. She maybe gone a little too far off the reservation even for him. And Contagion number 2 sees Power Man and Iron Fist join the battle of this sort of supernatural plague that is sweeping Manhattan. That is it for us for comics this week. We're back in just a second to talk about horror movies. With Halloween closing in upon us, I'm still watching horror movies. I think we all are watching horror movies.
Yeah, we're going to update on a few of those.
Yeah. Do you guys do any... You guys got costumes this year?
I don't really do costumes.
I'm probably going to pull out a costume.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You got plans?
I think I'm just going to... I'm going to do either Obi-Wan or Old Man Luke.
Oh, okay. Nice.
I'll break out. There's even talk of dressing up my dog like a... I think the going thing is R2-D2.
Yeah, I think this is a very good idea.
Ross was trying to get me to buy a pretzel costume for our dog, and I was like, our dog is not going to be happy in that costume.
My sister bought a little, it's like a pumpkin with teeth that fits over, like, a little helmet over a cat's ears and stuff. And I gave it just a quick test drive on Moon Pie last night.
Moon Pie's going to murder you in your sleep.
He did not care for it.
No, cats don't like costumes.
No. I remember putting one of my cats in Yoda ears, and she just about was like, looked so dejected. Now yeah. Kaylee wants to put them in Ewok costumes this year, and I'm like, that's not gonna...
Your cats are going to kill you.
Yeah, no, it's just so sad, so I gave up on it.
So I've got a Captain America costume, I've got a jumpsuit that came with, like, gloves, and I just bought some boots, and I'm just waiting the wig to arrive.
Okay.
From China, so it's been rescheduled several times, but it's supposed to be here soon, so hopefully that'll work out.
That's pretty cool.
Then I went to Target and bought Halloween decorations, because I can't resist those decorations.
I have been doing some decorating. I've got multicolored lights up inside my place, so mm-hmm. that when you turn off the lights, it's a cool, glowy Halloween vibe inside, mm-hmm. and I've got them lining a few windows. These are like, you know, like the purple and orange lights
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've got some decorations outside. I've got a big, scary bat with glowing eyes. Something like my brother and I think sister-in-law got me a few years ago, which was like a string of lights that have like little ghosts on them, right?
Yeah,
just a little uh-huh. short ones, enough that you could put like over the frame of a door or something
sure,
like that.
Yeah.
I put them up outside my apartment and I hadn't really looked at them, but like the faces that are under the little sort of the little cloth of yeah. the ghosty sheet are like horrible ghoulish faces. They're like really creepy looking. Anyway, it's delightful.
And I actually built some DIY
yeah, I saw you,
stuff
you
yesterday.
Built a little haunt. This is the thing that like when I go to Spirit and I go to Target and I see all this stuff, I'm like, man, you could really... And when I go trick-or-treating, you see people like put up their like awesome displays. I'm
yeah.
like, man, I would love to build an awesome display. I just don't have the time or energy for it.
Yeah.
But I'm slowly building up my collection of decorations. This year I added there's a little doorbell thing I got at Target. It's like $12. They're pretty cheap.
That's cool.
But you just hang it over there. You push the button, it makes a noise, and the little eyeball pops open and, like, looks from left to right.
Oh, that's cool.
And it says something about... And then there's... I got a little motion-activated cat that turns its eyes when he walks by you.
Randy, I remember a time when you did not watch a lot of horror movies, and now you've been kind of, with your kid, been watching more horror movies each year.
Yeah, we just do it Halloween. Like, it's my thing. I don't do it throughout the year for the most part, but at Halloween I watch
horror Halloween.
Movies. Another year or two, and Randy will be full Halloween freak.
I'm not turning into a Halloween freak like the rest of you. However, I do enjoy...
You tell yourself what you need.
I enjoy a good Halloween.
Yeah.
But look, once the 31st pass, I'm going to be in a Thanksgiving mode. That's how it goes. And then Christmas.
That's okay. Yeah. That's acceptable.
So I did watch a couple movies this month. One, Dave, you and I saw.
Yes.
And then one I saw with my kid, which I know you guys have watched. So the one that we saw, Dave, is called One Cut of the Dead.
Right.
It is a Japanese...
Like one cut, like, you know, like when you take a... Do like one cut in film.
Yes. Yeah.
Like everything filmed in a single take.
Yeah. It is a Japanese horror movie. It's actually not even a horror movie.
Right. It looks like a horror movie, and like the very basic premise that was all we knew going into it, and really all you should know going into it.
It's on Shudder. It's only available on Shudder right now.
Yeah. But the basic premise is that there's somebody who's making a zombie movie, or there's a small low budget zombie movie when actual zombies attack.
Yep.
And this movie becomes a delightful series of twists about which I can't really say too much.
Right. You don't want to know. Here's what I will say, and the thing that I wish, that kind of wish I'd known going in, is that you're not going to understand why people love this movie until you've seen the whole thing.
Right.
Like, there's several notable sort of break moments in this. I would say there's three very distinct acts.
Right.
And after the first act, I thought the movie was over. In fact, we were all like, oh, it's only a short movie, right? We've been watching for like an hour, and Dave was like, it's not over.
Yeah.
But Mandy and I, who were watching, were like, no, that's probably about it, right? There's credits and stuff like that. So the first act... I was like, okay, that was kind of fun. I don't understand why people love this so much. The second act, I was bewildered by what was going on.
Right.
And the third act, I fell completely in love with it. And the only way that works is if I've watched the first two acts.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. I was pretty sure as I was watching it during acts one and two, I was like, this is fun, but I feel like I've got a cultural disconnect and I'm just not quite getting whatever it is they're wanting me to get.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it comes together in such a cool way in the third act that... I almost guarantee if you make it, if you stick it out, you will feel very satisfied with things. I don't know of any other movie to quite compare it to. There's nothing else I can think of quite like it. And I know that now if I rewatched it, I would enjoy those first two halves more.
Yeah.
But I think it's one I'll only occasionally revisit because it was just delightful.
It was super fun.
Why do you want to make me buy another streaming service? I do not need another
streaming service. Nick, don't buy the streaming service. Just buy it if you can buy it somewhere.
You can't buy it anywhere.
You can't even buy it?
No, it's impossible to buy it. But here's the thing, Nick. Just get Shudder for the month. It's like $5.
They also have, what is it, the Creepshow revival that's getting really good reviews?
Yeah, we were thinking about watching that, but we didn't have time.
And all my horror movie friends tell me that Shudder has an amazing curated collection of movies. Yeah. So this is probably the month to add Shudder and watch, if you're watching a bunch of movies. The other movie I watched is one that you guys had already seen. It's been on my list, Happy Death Day.
Yep. Yes.
The Groundhog Day of Horror. Written by a comics writer, Scott Lobdell, who writes comics I mostly hated.
Yep.
I went into this... I have kind of a love-hate relationship with these sort of, like, Groundhog Day type stories.
Right.
I can very quickly turn on them, but if they're done well, I like them.
Right.
This one started off... It took a while to win me over, and I was almost thinking, I'm not going to like this, because they go through her... She dies, she comes back to life thing... Like three or four times.
And we should just real quick say, she's like a kind of a snooty cheerleader-ish girl.
She's a mean girl. She's a college mean girl.
Yeah, she's a mean girl. And there's kind of a character arc for her and stuff. But yeah.
She's being killed by some kind of serial killer. He wears a baby mask, which is their school mascot.
Yep.
It's sort of a Jason type thing.
Yeah.
And every time she dies, she wakes up and starts the day over. And it's her figuring out what's going on. I feel like you can't run through the same sequence with minor changes more than once before I start to get annoyed, and they did it a couple times.
You know, I somewhat disagree, because I think that, to me, there was something interesting going on in all those cases.
Yep.
Hmm. Even if it was just watching her reactions, and seeing how, like, she, you know, I'm pretty sure she immediately tried to make some changes, only to find that they weren't working too well.
Well, it also doesn't work if you don't have an actress or actor that can do it. And yeah. She's great.
I think we all thought she did a good job.
Yeah, I liked her. And actually, some of the bits, when she basically gets frustrated, the thing that makes Groundhog Day funny, and the thing that makes these...
The
is
montage.
When, the montage, yeah. Well, also, like, I remember Xena did this thing. Uh-huh. And I remember a lot about the Xenas that I watched, but when Xena had her like Groundhog Day thing. There's one point where Joxer comes in to wake them up every day.
Yeah.
And at one point they're doing the montage thing. She wakes up, she just throws the chakra at him and kills him and goes back to bed because she's so fed up with the whole thing.
Yeah.
At the point where you're fed up with your day repeating is when I tend to enjoy these things. So yeah. The bit where she decides to wander around naked.
Yep.
And is given the finger guns and all that stuff. That's when I fell in love with the movie.
You know, I'd forgotten that it did reach that point.
Yep.
Now I have to wonder, and I don't know if they ever touch on this. It's like. For her, the world reboots every time she dies.
Yeah.
Although there's an interesting twist on this little ways near the end. Continue. Yeah, where she's like, they do like an x-ray scan of her and they find that she has like, it looks like a bones of heel that were broken, you know, like years ago. And she's like, oh, I'm going to get internal injuries if I keep this up.
Yeah.
And so suddenly it's like, oh, you can't just take for granted you're going to come back and just accept that you're going to die.
Right.
And that was a pretty cool little motivator.
Yeah.
Crap, what was that? What were you just talking about, Randy?
Talking about her being naked.
I guess the montage of the don't care kind of perspective. Oh, she reboots for her. Is there any possibility that it doesn't reboot for the other people, that there's just infinite other universes she's going through? Like, in other words, in that Xena one, Joxer just died there.
Yeah.
And his future continued.
I don't know.
Anyway, I don't think they particularly address that, but they might in the second one, which kind of runs wild with the notion.
Yeah, see that? People are saying that I might enjoy the second one more, and I'm definitely going to give that a shot. I also thought, I think they did too many fake outs of the, oh, it's all over. No, it's not. I thought that was... that.
See, I kind of like that again.
And
like, I feel like you almost have to, it has to have enough twists and turns in something that feels conventional in so many other ways.
I also feel like one of the big things when you do this kind of thing, mm-hmm. you got to reveal why she's looping, and there's no reveal of why she loops.
Is it in the sequel?
It's in the second
one. Okay, well, but that's, you should put that in your movie.
Yeah, I guess I kind of forgot that they didn't explain it in that. Do they not even hint at it?
No, not really at all.
Okay, I guess they wanted to see if it
Because ultimately her story... At the end of that, if they didn't make the sequel, it does conclude. You don't get a reason why.
It does, but I feel like if you're doing a loop story, you need a reveal for why.
Did he find out why he was looping in Groundhog Day?
No.
Oh, does he not?
I don't think so.
I thought it was to be a better person.
Yeah, but like, but God did it?
There's no, like...
The universe did it?
Yeah, there's no...
And you like reveal. Groundhog Day.
I do, but I don't love it as much as everybody else does.
Yeah. Yeah, usually, like if Star Trek or somebody does it, they do say why. There's some weird spatial anomaly doing
it's
it or whatever.
Fault.
I hadn't even thought of that as a criticism, probably because I was satisfied with the emotional arc of the story.
Yeah.
But anyway, I do think you should try out the second one and see if you like it a little bit better. I definitely was pretty happy with Happy Death Day, and I think you were too, Nick.
I did not dislike it. I enjoyed it, but I definitely I had
it just rights. You weren't just like super into
it. I liked the second one quite a bit, too.
And I definitely thought the second one was a lesser outing. It was, I felt like sort of the humor just didn't hit as much, but it was fascinating in the sense where I was like, oh, this goes to crazy town fast.
Yep.
Nick, Dave, you've watched a couple of them more.
My brother and I are both fans of found footage horror movies, which are a little hit and miss for people. Like there's definitely a contingent that hates them. And just didn't want something to do with them. Or if you get motion sickness, you just can't do them. But I enjoy ones that are well made by my standards. And so we watched a couple, one of which I'd seen and one I hadn't. One was Grave Encounters. I feel like this came out about 10, 12 years ago, maybe. Do you know about it, Nick?
I don't.
So this one, I think right as the Ghost Hunter TV show craze was taking off, that's when this must be made. Essentially, you've got sort of a jaded group of ghost hunters who are clearly they don't believe in ghosts. Behind the scenes, you see them talking to each other and doing camera checks, and they're going to be visiting and staying overnight at like an old psychiatric hospital, which one of the cool things, there's a place that I went to with a couple of friends a few years ago The Yorktown, I think, Memorial Hospital, which was a old psychiatric institute that's now fallen into disrepair. And you can do tours through it because it looks all spooky and ghostly. It looks like Silent Hill in there. And the day we went, it was even raining, so there was like water dripping from the ceiling and stuff. The place has fantastic visuals, and I do actually recommend visiting the real place. But that's kind of like what they're in here. It's a supposedly very haunted place. They don't really think they're going to find anything. Obviously, they do find some weird things happening. And including, like, the door, they actually, like, put a chain on the door kind of for novelty's sake so that they can't get out. And the windows are, like, barred because it was a psychiatric institute. Yeah. And they begin to see some weird stuff. And when they try and get out, they try some sort of smart things, which I thought was good. The crew is pretty clever about it. They don't work. Things will happen, like, they finally do get out of the door, and it just leads to another hallway. And there was, like, definitely not that hallway there before. It's as if the place itself is distorting. And there's also some funny stuff in it early on, like, they're doing their overly serious thing in front of the Memorial Hospital, or, like, you know, 50 years ago, over 20 people died in this very... And they're like, a car drives by, and they're like, wait, hold it. It's just, like, too noisy. This is a good, solidly made movie with a decent amount of jump scares. It's kind of got a decent story to tell that's a little... Some of the creatures that they run into are a little conventional by now. They have, like, that CG thing where, like, they'll find somebody in a corner and it'll be like a nurse or something and they'll turn around and their mouth will like open like larger than you can. Yeah. And you're like, okay, we've seen that effect before. This was right at the dawn of it, but it does hold up. It doesn't hold up super great. It's a little bit like, I've been there before. Certainly there are movies like Wreck, the Spanish horror films, found footage one that I would recommend far over this one, but it was a good solid horror outing and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed more a pulpy kind of found footage movie called As Above, So Below. The one's recommended by one of our staffers, Amanda. I knew that she was into it. And when I first saw it, I was like, this is okay, but weird, because it's not quite a full-on horror movie. It's like the lead in it is a 20-something woman who's almost like Lara Croft. She is a scholar and explorer who's like on the trail of like alchemical... transmutation stuff. The As Above, So Below comes from like the old alchemist's notion for transmuting base metals to gold and ultimately to eternal life.
This is about like the catacombs under Paris.
Yeah, right? So her father like died. It actually opens really dramatically in Iran, and she's like she's got like a little sort of like a GoPro or something like that attached, and she's found out that they're going to, you know, like, blow up a cavern system that has old relics and stuff in that, sort of a new regime taking over, blowing up the old regime stuff. And she knows that she's in a special danger of getting caught as a woman, but she has a friend there and can get into this network of tunnels, and they're literally going to blow it up, like, at sundown. And she gets there, like, it feels like 5 minutes before sundown. So she's got to race down in there. There's even like a few guards patrolling and they kind of duck and avoid them. And they have to get in this place and try and get to look at this inscription that may be key to what she needs before it gets blown up. It's a really cool opening sequence. And there's a little bit of a pulp quality to it, you know, where the guy who's like her friend there is like, what's her name? Her name is like Scarlett Marlowe, which is a very action hero name.
It's weird. I saw this movie in theaters. I know I did, but what you're describing, I have no recollection of at all.
Well, the opening isn't really like the rest of it.
Yeah.
But the old guy's like, Scarlett, you've got to be careful. You know, this obsession was the death of your father. It's like a pulp kind of... If you go watch it wanting a horror movie, I think you'll be disappointed. But if you go wanting to see kind of an adventure movie with sort of a Da Vinci Code-esque stuff... and exploration, and then some horror mixed into it, I think you'll have a good time. Ultimately, yes, this leads them to working with a team of sort of urban explorers in Paris and a few friends of hers to go and explore these catacombs where she thinks she might actually find the thing that her father never could. And this was in the ad, so I don't feel bad giving it away, but there's a sense that they may at a certain point have gone crossed over into literally into hell.
Yeah.
They find a archway that says, abandon hope all ye who enter here. This is there's some cool puzzle solving stuff. There's weird bits and pieces from people's past that they see that are clearly haunting them. The creepy stuff is creepy, but it's also kind of a fun, slightly larger-than-life movie.
I need to watch this again, because I remember seeing it and being just okay with...
That was definitely my first reaction, but I don't know, I found myself really taken with it afterwards.
It's just at Netflix.
And certainly, the guy who directed is the guy who directed Shyamalan's comeback movie, Devil.
Right.
Where he scripted but didn't direct it. One of the key scenes for me that I really liked is when there is some creatures that arise later on in it, there's a point where she has to, like, backtrack to go to someplace where they were before because they realize they screwed something up. And you see from her perspective with the camera, you know, one of those head-mounted cameras, like a GoPro or something, her running through the thing, and one of these creatures comes at her. And because she's kind of more badass than the average person, it's like she cold cocks it and, like, just keeps on running. Now, it's not an action movie quite, but she's a little bit better prepared than most heroes would be in a found footage horror movie. So anyway, As Above, So Below, recommended. Also, slight recommendation for Grave Encounters. What about y'all?
I have two, actually. Okay. I was going to mention real quickly In the Tall Grass, which I did finally...
Did you watch it?
Right, we talked about it the other week, right? This is the Stephen King-Joe Hill collaboration.
Yeah, it's based on their novella. I'm not going to spoil anything, but it feels like it's a really good rendition of the book. They definitely explore some avenues that it didn't. But it's creepy. The effects are fun. It's maybe not the best horror movie, but if you kind of liked what you saw in the trailer,
well,
I would definitely suggest checking it out.
The standard of was it scary or not isn't. I think that's a kind of a weak baseline standard for horror.
Some people want to watch just horror for jump scares and things like that.
Right. I mean, I guess that's okay. But like with Stephen King, I usually am interested in character and story. Does it bring it on that front?
A little bit. It's not. It's a little surface at times.
Okay.
And sometimes Joe Hill's characters can feel a little surface.
Yeah.
He doesn't have maybe the depth that his father gives characters.
Okay, fair enough.
Which is interesting, but...
But you think it's a good...
It's a good outing.
It's a decent outing?
Yeah, if you're wanting to watch a movie
Compared to Netflix's Gerald's Game?
I like Gerald's Game better.
Okay, because I like that quite a bit.
I think that is also because Gerald's Game is a stronger story.
Right. There's lots of interesting turns in that.
And this is based on a novella, so they had to sort of invent some of it to kind of give it a complete, like, fleshing out. If you haven't seen Gerald's Game, go watch that. It's disturbing, but it's...
But if you have seen Gerald's Game, consider The Tall Grass.
Yes. The other movie, my wife and I randomly occasionally look at lists online of, like, best horror movie streaming on all the streaming services,
because
we have most of them because we're, you know, addicts. And we came across one called The Apostle, which is also the name of another movie with Robert Duvall about a priest. This is not. This is a weird kind of indie horror flick. It's quiet, but it's from the director Gareth Edwards, who did the movie The Raid.
Okay.
Yeah. So, which is a little weird for him to do kind of this
kind
of atmospheric...
I haven't seen it, but The Raid was a big action-adventure martial arts movie all staged in a building,
It's
right?
What the Dread movie essentially was. But this is sort of an atmospheric period horror about a guy infiltrating a cult to rescue his sister.
Uh-huh.
This takes place in, like, the 1800s. The cult leader is Michael Sheen, and sort of a charismatic... role for him, which he's always a good actor. So the main character, I don't remember his name, but it's the a guy from Downton Abbey.
Okay.
So it's actually they've got some pretty good stars. I don't know if I would call this like a horror. It's very kind of drama laced with sort of supernatural and a ton of gore. I don't think I've seen more gore in a movie in quite some time.
Since Peter Jackson's Dead Alive.
maybe so. But the story is very compelling, and that is sort of where you kind of get invested in this this guy who is trying to find his sister while kind of like mixing with the cult people and who
is
are
that
just
in the present.
No, it's the past. It's like the 1800s.
Oh, okay, that's right.
On an island, and they worship like a weird kind of like goddess of like the earth.
Okay.
It's not Gaia, but, you know, kind of paganish.
A chthonic
deity. A little bit like that. And it goes to some interesting places, some I didn't really expect. But there's a lot of human horror as well, you know. where it's like
men do.
Yeah, the evil that men do, and sort of the kind of thought processes back then were maybe not as advanced as we are now. And even then, I'm questioning ourselves.
Sure.
But I'm really glad I watched it. I don't know if I would ever revisit it, just because it's a little hardcore.
Yeah.
But it's sort of in that same vein as, like, Hereditary and Midsommar.
Yeah.
Where maybe not as, like, delicately executed as those.
Right.
But it's really compelling.
Okay. That's on the Apostle.
It's the Apostle. It's on Netflix. So if you've got... It was a little on the longer side. I think it was like a little over 2 hours.
Hmm.
If you've got a chance, I would probably suggest watching it. It was interesting. I don't know if I could say fun or it was a jolly good time.
Right, well, yeah, just as you wouldn't really say that of Hereditary.
God, no. but I think it's worth watching.
Okay.
None of the horror trip, but the horror of people, I guess. I'm watching The Politician on Netflix. It's Ryan Murphy. Who did People vs. O.J. Simpson, American Horror Story, and all that stuff.
Scream Queens.
He is. He made a deal with Netflix. This is his first outing with them. And it is... it's the guy who played Benji from Pitch Perfect is the lead. He's basically this guy in this high school. He's got a rich mom, played by Gwyneth Paltrow. His dad is played by Bob Balaban, who you might know from Seinfeld. And his brothers are like these douchey Winklevoss twins types.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he has decided he was going to be president, and so he is like building this life for himself that builds up to be president. So he really wants to get into Harvard, and he wants to be student body president. And it's about the election where he is getting to be student body president. It's all about that stuff. And it has a sort of black comedy aspect that Ryan Murphy does, the sort of horrible people kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It is best described probably as a shortcut, I would say, is like it's Wes Anderson's House of Cards.
Okay.
It brings the sort of...
A stylish quirkiness to it, or...?
Not necessarily stylish quirky, but it's basically the... all the double dealing and all the... Everyone is terrible, no one has actual morals, everyone is out to get power.
Uh-huh.
But in a high school setting.
Reminds me a little of, like, Election. I don't know if
I can definitely see it as Election. That's just where I'd get the Wes Anderson thing, too. Yeah. I'm really enjoying this. I think it's a lot of fun. I like all the actors in it. I like the story. I think they're doing a good job of sort of telling a story about sort of politics in high school. I would definitely point people toward this.
Okay, that sounds interesting. Where's that running?
It's on Netflix.
Netflix. Yeah. A lot of stuff on Netflix.
It is, yeah. It's almost like they're trying desperately to not compete with all the other streaming services.
Well, they seem to be doing pretty good.
I don't feel like they have to compete. I think they're a known quality.
They're the top dog. You're always trying to take them down.
Until Disney Plus comes out.
Yeah.
But even then, I don't know if they'll be able to compete with what Netflix does.
I mean, Disney Plus seems like it'll be, like, for sort of nerdy genre fans, it's sort of a must-have. For the average person who might not be as into, like, superheroes and stuff like that, it may not be as big a thing.
I mean, they are diversifying themselves in that, like, they have so many properties that they're revisiting. Like, not only, like, they're making Lady and the Tramp live action exclusively available to, but they're also doing a lot of, like, comebacks of their shows, so... There's a little bit more, but...
We shall see. Yeah. But it's definitely for people who like the Disney brand.
Yes, that's true.
All right, well, that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.